happen to find yourself walking down Violet Terrace in Berwick-upon-Tweed, you will come across a charity shop called Wear and Care. Just another charity shop? No way. Wear and Care is run by Hospice Care North Northumberland, and this programme is intended to shine a light on this organisation, what it does and who it's for, together with some of its achievements. My name is Yvonne Bell, and I'll be your guide during our brief glimpse into the workings of the organisation. This programme is called I'll Walk Beside You, because this sums up so neatly the purpose of the movement, that of providing comfort and support 7 days a week to those with a life-shortening illness and to their loved ones. Unlike most mission statements, which contain often impenetrable management gobbledygook, Hospice Cares is delightfully simple and straightforward. To ensure that our communities have free, flexible and ongoing access to the best possible palliative care. This is delivered at whatever stage of an individual's illness and at a time and place of their choosing. That says it all, and during the next 60 minutes this programme will show how this is done. My colleague Jackie Keynes-Lang has been out and about with her microphone, talking to some of those involved in helping to realise this aim. So let's join her at a drop-in centre, held at the back of Berwick's shop on this lovely summer's morning, where a special extension with a suite of comfortable rooms has been specially built. She's talking with Julie Frost, the great mover and shaker of the organisation. So let's let Julie introduce herself.
My name's Julie Frost and I look after the marketing and communications for Hospice Care. So I've worked with the charity for nearly 6 years. And my work involves, communicating our clinical services to our clinical catchment area, which is quite vast. It's North Northumberland.
And quite sparsely populated.
Well, and it's quite sparsely populated. So we know that in this huge area, this big rural area, that there are 63,000 people living. Obviously not all adults, some are children, but all of those people that are over 18 are able to, if necessary, access our clinical services. So one of my biggest challenges is communicating who we are and what we offer to all those people. And another challenge that I have is that in some of the most rural areas of North Northumberland, broadband is intermittent.
Yeah, of course.
Not everybody is interested in using computers and laptops, so we still need to have the written words. So we have magazines and we have literature. And one of my projects at the moment is delivering talks to community groups. So that's WI, Rotary, U3As, in a wheel. And that's working really well, because I think I found from my own experience that no matter how many magazines you put out, how many posts you put on Facebook, there's nothing quite so powerful as sitting with people in a room and sharing information about the hospice.
Do you think that there is sort of a tendency to misunderstand what hospice care delivers and how it's delivered?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the picture that people have of hospice is perhaps very different to that you're trying to convey through your marketing activities.
I think it is, and without fail, when I've delivered talks, most people in the room will say things like, I didn't realise, I didn't know, oh, I thought it was completely different. And I think the word hospice to most people sums up the very end of life care, so the sort of last 1 or 2 weeks of somebody's life. But hospice care, the journey that we can take people on, is from the very point of diagnosis, and we can support them, and in some cases for many years. So hospice care is not about very end of life. It's about having that emotional support for yourself and your family and anybody else who's important to you from the very point of diagnosis. And
well, indeed, your strapline is caring for life.
It is, absolutely. So, I've had experiences of death and bereavement with close family members, with friends. Because I'm not from here, in an area, we lived in a city down south where there wasn't hospice care. And I can just see how incredible it is that we have this. It's a luxury to have this facility.
Yes.
And for me, it's a privilege to be part of somebody's life, during that journey. Although I don't have I don't have lots of direct contact with the families. Sometimes I do if they're very generous and able to share their story with me, then I'll go to the family's home and have a coffee. And but for me, it's about feeling like I'm making a difference. And in my own way, I am, because I'm part of this bigger jigsaw at the hospice. And it is, it's quite a humbling environment. And sometimes I think on the admin side, you can get very bogged down with too much work, not enough hours. And then you spend time with Sue, and she might share a story.
We're going to meet Sue
shortly. You're going to meet
with
her. And then it just pulls it all back into focus as to why we're here, why we want to work long hours, and how important the hospice is to everyone that lives in North Northumberland.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Jackie. Thank you.
Well, that was one of the main organisers of the movement up here. Now let's hear from a couple of those who have benefited from the services of the movement, and they can tell us how it has helped them.
Okay, well, I'm just chatting with Sue and John. Now, Sue, you've been coming to the drop-in for quite some time here at Hospice Care, I think.
Yes, I was diagnosed 5 years ago, and I had chemo. And then after that finished, I was advised I could come here. So probably about 4 years, 5 years.
And has that been a positive thing? Obviously, you've been coming for 5 years, so there must have been something bring you back.
Yes, it is very positive for me, because when I finished my chemo, I felt they were a lifeline to me and great help. And in fact, I cried when I left. Cause
you feel a bit abandoned, I think, at the end of treatment sometimes.
I think so. And I started coming here, and I've got the support of the hospice nurses, and you know.
So you can you can access sort of clinical and care and stuff here, can you? And I mean, we know that Sue Gilbertson, who's the clinical manager of the hospice care, is here today, that's something that happens. I think that there's regularly sort of clinical staff here.
Yes. Also, they're on the end of the telephone line. So, you know, then they'd come up to see you if you wanted, needed.
And what is it sort of meant to you in emotional terms? Because obviously part of it's a peer-to-peer drop-in, and so you come and you see other people. So that, is that, you know, sharing stories?
Yeah. Well, sometimes I feel it, get up in the morning, I feel a bit down, you know. And, I'll get myself there to the hospice. And, you know, after talking to everybody, come away feeling, you know, a bit
uplifted.
Yes.
Have quite a good laugh here sometimes as
well. Yeah, that's right.
Yes, no holds barred sometimes. And John, you're married to Sue,
yes,
and you don't come to the drop-ins, and you've come today.
No, this is my first visit, so I'm very much on a learning curve. But I do know that when Sue has been to these Monday morning things, when she comes back home, she seems to be uplifted. So there's something good going on here. I do know that.
That's great, isn't it? And it's a sense that I think sometimes when, as a family, you've experienced these and are experiencing these life-shortening, life-damaging illnesses, it can feel very lonely.
Yes, it certainly does. And you seem as though you don't want to talk to people. You don't want to talk to people about it. And yet when you it seems that when you come here, everything's open and you discuss everything amongst yourselves. The other side of it is, you know, you don't like to talk about these things, and you have to force yourself sometimes. And I think this sort of environment helps that very much.
Thank you. And Sue, do you think that some of that is because everybody here has pretty much gone through something or the other?
Oh, definitely. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
As John was saying in that clip, when you know you have one of these life-shortening conditions, it can be extremely difficult to talk about it. So here is Jackie with Veronica and Gail, and they will explain how hospice care helps you to do this.
Well, I'm sat here with two, actually, very, I mean, we are having lovely weather, so obviously, but you're looking very healthy, if I may say so. So would you like to introduce yourselves?
Yes, I'm Veronica Powell, and I live in Spittal, and I've been here for 7 months.
In Spittal for 7 months?
Yes.
And coming to the drop-in?
Yes. How long have I come in? About 3 weeks?
Yeah.
About 3 weeks. I found out by Gail when I met her at a party, and that's how I found this place, and I think it's absolutely fantastic.
It's great. Well, we all meet Gail at a party. So, Gail, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Gail Heck, and I live in Norham.
Gail, I think that's how I got to know about the drop-ins, was because you told me.
Yeah.
So how long have you been coming along?
Oh, since 2015, when I first got cancer. I had breast cancer, and it wasn't such an easy journey. I've been coming ever since.
What have the drop-ins meant to you during that time? So it's quite a long time.
Oh, it's great. You feel part of your own community of people who have been through what you have been through, and you can help each other, support each other, whilst enjoying the coffee morning at the same time.
But and biscuits.
Yeah, it's a safe space, yeah. to speak.
Mm. And that's right, because as much as people who haven't experienced these sort of illnesses are loving and kind and want the best for you, you can still feel a bit lonely, can't you, Veronica?
Yes, you can, because when I found out I had breast cancer, which was by accident, my mother wasn't very well at the time, and although I wanted to tell her and my family, I couldn't. And I remember my consultant and the Macmillan nurse said that when people have cancer, it's difficult enough, the person who's ill dealing with it, you cannot imagine the burden their partners and their family hold. So I didn't say anything to my mother till the operation was done and I was okay. I've written a journal about my travel with cancer. I've yet to finish it, but it was important for my healing process.
People often find that writing about these things is actually quite cathartic, and it's quite interesting. As you say, I think people often find actually the telling their relatives and children perhaps one of the most painful things. How did you find all of that, Gail?
Yeah, well, I actually did a course here at the hospice with Anne Ryland, which was a writing course, and I was the only one who showed up, but it was fantastic. It was very interesting how through writing and getting your thoughts out, it was quite upsetting, but you were, processing.
You're healing yourself through doing
yes,
it.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm. Yes.
That was wonderful.
And that's clearly something you share.
It is. I totally believe in that. I think it's important because you can't really explain to your family and friends what you're going through. When you write it down, you're actually going through the process while writing it and gives them a better chance. And I remember my mother, before she passed away, I gave her the first chapter. And then when she read it, she says she now understood why I didn't tell the family at that time.
Yes.
And yes, I would recommend anybody to write their history down. Very, very important.
I think it can also be helpful for other people going through it who struggle to talk at things like the drop-ins, to actually sit and read what other people have experienced.
Possibly.
Yeah,
I would think so. And I think it's also very important for the spouses and their partners, because sometimes they can't quite, they're there for you, but they can't feel what you're feeling. But in writing, they can read it and understand.
Lovely. Thank you very much. Oh, Gail.
Well, my husband read a book called Breast Cancer for Husbands, which was really helpful to him. So he was like the perfect husband, really helpful.
Well, we'll all be round to your place then. Thank you. Thank you, Gail. Thank you, Veronica.
So there you are. Take a writing course with Hospice Care. I bet you never thought you could do that. A writing course at the hospice? Well, whilst we're digesting all that, let's take a short breather and have a little music. We are grateful to the Border Tarts, a well-known singing group here in Berwick, for agreeing to join us today and for bringing us this piece entitled Shenandoah. Relax and enjoy the Border Tarts.
Oh, Shenandoah, I long to hear you.
Thank you, Border Tarts. That was Shenandoah. Well, I think we're beginning to get the idea of how this all works, so let's step out of the back of the shop here and into the shop itself, where we'll meet Joyce Fairbairn, the shop manager, and learn something of just one of the support activities helping to make this all possible.
Well, high streets everywhere are battling to retain shops and shoppers, so it's always good to hear a real success story. And a Berwick charity shop is quietly building a loyal and satisfied client base. It was opened by Hospice Care North Northumberland in August 2015. And Wear and Care, tucked away along here on Violet Terrace in Berwick, is busy supporting the work of Hospice Care North Northumberland. And I've come along here, we've come into a wonderful, airy, bright, light boutique shop, Chandeliers, up here to seek out one of the movers and shakers of the Wear and Care shops. Let her introduce herself.
Hi, Jackie. I'm Joyce Fairbairn, and I'm the manager of the Wear and Care shop in Berwick and Wooler, which we'll come on to later. Yes.
That's right, we're planning a trip over to Wooler, yes. The gateway to the Cheviots.
Yes.
But here we are in Berwick, and Joyce, this was where Hospice Care North Northumberland decided to launch into actually what some might think was quite a brave adventure, really, into retail. Because, you know, even charity shops are struggling on the high street, and this particular shop as I said in my introduction, is actually tucked away. It's not on the high street in Berwick,
no,
is it?
No, it's not. We're right out on a limb, and therefore would you rely on recommendations and people knowing about the shop. We don't get a lot of passing trade at all.
Joyce, you've mentioned that out the back from where we're sat, or after you go through the steam rooms and the sorting rooms, there's actually clinical rooms still.
Yes.
And I think, so you do have clients here, and you do have clinical staff coming here in Berwick, and some of the, from the head offices in Annex.
Yes.
So tell us a bit more about other things that go on.
Yeah. We have counselling, no, not counselling, so well, we do have counselling session in the back rooms, as we call them in the shop. We also have a drop-in on a Monday for anybody who is affected in any way with cancer, and there's a nurse here, and they just come in for a coffee and a chat. So it can be people who are newly diagnosed, people who are having treatment, anybody who's sort of affected in any way at all can pop in.
So a sort of comfortable, safe environment. And I think there's always usually a member of clinical staff there available for a private talk.
Yes, always, and then we have a lovely couple who volunteered, and then they roped in another lady, Christine, and they hold regular coffee mornings the last Friday in the month, and all that money is extra towards hospice care. So we've got quite a bit going on, and we would like the rooms out the back to be used more, because they are available in the evenings for any meetings, or, you know, if any small groups are looking for somewhere to hold a meeting. They're lovely rooms and they are available at any time. We'd like it to become like a community hub. That would be the idea, you know. We don't want it wasted. But it's used quite regularly at the moment.
Well, it's been absolutely delightful to come here to the Berwick shop. And I have to tell people that if you haven't been here along Violet Terrace in Berwick, it's just above what is now the B&M car park. And it just is such a charming place to come. And I know it sounds awful, but it smells nice too. And everything looks so lovely. It is organised like a boutique. It's kind of colour-coded. You just feel, oh, I've got to have a look the second you walk in.
People call it the little treasure trove, the hidden treasure trove in Berwick. That's what it's been called by the customers.
Joyce, thank you very much. I'll see you in Wooler.
You will, Jackie. Thank you.
We'll be following Joyce and Jackie over to Wooler shortly. Have you heard of an Admiral Nurse? Not a well-known title, perhaps, but a very important member of the hospice care team. We have one here, so let's find out a bit about her and what she does.
Well, I'm sat outside here in the very pretty little garden behind the Wear and Care shop in Berwick, under a beautiful blue sky, swift soaring above, with Betty Lucas. Betty, you're an Admiral Nurse. Now, we know, we hear it in the news all the time, the issues of dementia and an ageing population. Tell us a bit about your role with hospice care.
Hello. Admiral nurses are nurses who have had lots of experience of working with those people who are living with dementia. Each Admiral nurse role will be different depending on the host organisation, because we're half employed by Dementia UK and half by the hospice. Because this is a hospice, my role is to support those carers and families of people who are in the later stages of dementia, those who are living with advanced dementia, by giving advice and support and emotionally.
Where do you deliver these services?
Well, we receive referrals, and people can self-refer if they're having some problems or difficulties coping with change and just managing things around dementia. So I would come to somebody's house. I would say the carer, the family member, would be the person who would be referred to me.
Yeah.
But by supporting the carer, I can also support the person with dementia. If the carer wanted to come to the hospice, then that would be okay. I'll also go into care homes and support carers there.
Ah, right. So, yeah, so you've got that split across. But as with the hospice, where there's a lot of really a home care or care at home, it sounds like that is the way that the emphasis of your work.
My work is mostly around supporting with advice and emotional aspect. I don't do any actual hands-on care as the hospice at home team do, but through me, the person who's living with dementia can access that hospice at home care. The thing about dementia, it's very, very difficult to see when somebody's coming to the end of their life.
Yes.
I can give advice around that. A lot of the questions I'm asked by family members is, what does it look like? So I'm able to support them through that and look at the changes and prepare them.
And what does it look like?
It looks like a slowing down. People sleep more, eat less, become more withdrawn. May have problems with their swallow, much the same as people who aren't living with dementia.
Yes.
It's just identifying the start of it that's difficult. You know, we want people to have a good death, and we want to support not just the person who's dying, but also the family members and the carers around that, because, you know, memories live on with the living, don't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well, that's certainly made it a lot clearer for me, and it's comforting to know that Betty is close at hand here in the hospice. Much of this interviewing is taking place in rooms at the back of Berwick Wear and Care Shop, where we have the big patio doors open so we can enjoy this truly beautiful weather. We can hear the birds singing in the sunshine, including the seagulls, which I hope aren't causing you too much annoyance. Now, Anne Thompson knows a bit about the history of the building. So let's listen to what she has to tell us.
So would you like to introduce yourself?
My name's Anne Thompson and I live in Berwick-upon-Tweed. And I used to work at the infirmary as assistant matron, and I was at the infirmary when Hazel and Celia and the other girl all got their breast cancer, so I was there right from the beginning.
Yeah, it's Hazel Marsden, who this place that we're in is named after.
That's right, yes. And this big extension here wasn't here at the time, it was just the other end. And we used to have coffee mornings, and we used to do midnight walks, and we used to do all sorts of things.
To raise funds for the hospice care, and this building was sort of in effect set up and donated by Hazel's family in her memory.
Yes,
and and now you find yourself coming along here to the drop-ins.
I mean, I developed breast cancer, it's over 5 years ago now, and fortunately I had a lumpectomy and radiotherapy, and then went back for 5 years, you know, and I was actually discharged free of everything. So I've been one of the fortunate ones, really, not having to have chemo and that sort of thing.
And what made you come to the drop-ins here on a Monday?
It's the company. There is somebody to talk to if you need to, and I would miss it really, because it's now I'm on my own since my husband died. It's a place to go to where you know everybody. You know, I would be really upset if it closed.
I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
it feels like a place where you've got to know everybody,
that's
where
right,
you
yes.
can confide or just share or listen.
Yes, it is. Yes, and I mean there hasn't. There's usually somebody expert here if you have a problem to talk to.
Yes, because there's a couple of clinical rooms just here off to the right, nice little rooms with beds and chairs in, and you can go and chat to someone official.
That's right, yes. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, and for sharing the history of the
That's
Hazel Marsden
right.
House.
Yes, it's been open a long time now. No.
Yeah, you've seen a few changes in your time.
I have, yes. We used to have Harold service here, and doctor, what was the name of the doctor that used to sing? I can't remember his name. What was the name? What's she that?
Just Sue.
Sue, yes.
Sue?
What was the name of the doctor that used to sing carols here at Christmas?
Richard Knight?
Yes. Thank you, Gail.
Who was it?
Richard Knight.
That's right.
Richard Knight.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes, that was lovely.
Phone a friend. So you said that without moving your lips.
That's brilliant. Thank you.
It's getting a bit jolly in here now, and that will give you some idea of the general atmosphere in these drop-ins. People exchanging experiences and other stories, drinking tea and coffee, not to mention the biscuits and cake. So let's move out and leave them to it for a while and have another musical interlude. This time we'll hear from Bondington Voices, another Berwick-based singing group led by Stephen Block. Here they will sing for us, "Peace I Leave With You."
Peace, peace, peace.
Thank you, Bondington Voices. That was "Peace I Leave With You." We'll be hearing more from the Voices later in the programme when they'll be joined by the delectable mezzo-soprano Tamsin Davidson in a particularly beautiful rendering of "I'll Walk Beside You." Now let's follow Joyce and Jackie over to Wooler, where they should by now be comfortably ensconced in the wear and care shop on the High Street.
Well, we've now arrived in the Wooler shop after a beautiful drive, actually, from Berwick across and through here to the foothills of the Cheviots. And we're in the Wear and Care Wooler shop, which is quite a different space from Berwick, but equally beautifully clean and well laid out with lots of lovely looking, ornaments and books and a whole range of women's, children's and men's clothing, and some toys there. Electrical goods too, Joyce?
Yes, electrical goods as well.
Yeah, yes. You're the whole gamut, because you've got a pat tester, haven't you, I think?
Yes, we have. Mm-hmm. We have somebody who tests the machinery to make sure it's electrically safe. They call us the Rutherfords.
And the Rutherfords, in the sort of department store.
Yeah, in Morpeth, they call us.
Oh, how fabulous.
The Rutherfords of Wooler, yeah. So again,
a little bit of everything.
Yeah, exactly.
That's marvellous. Yeah, so. And Wooler, I mean, obviously, as we've said, this is on the High Street here, but the great success of that, following on from Berwick, there's new stuff in the air, I believe.
Yeah, there is. I mean, it's... the manager of the shop, I've got to be honest, I would like 4 shops in North Northumberland. I don't know whether the trustees would agree with me on that. But we've just been lucky enough to get a premises in Amble, and then I would be looking, got an idea of where I would like the 4th one.
Right, well, I've managed to lure 2 of the volunteers who work here in the Wooler Wear and Care shop over. Would you like to introduce yourself?
My name's Alicia. The reason that I love to volunteer here is because although it's for a good cause, you meet a lot of people and you make some friends. So it's a really good community to have a shop in like this.
And you live locally, do you, Alicia?
Yes, I'm getting a flat in Wooler, but at the minute I live about 6 miles out, but it's not too bad.
And how often do you volunteer?
Tuesdays and Saturdays, but I'd love to do more days when I get more equipment.
And what's your favourite thing about the shop and about being in here?
I think my favourite thing is that there's bits for everyone. There's something for everyone in this shop, and I think a lot of people that work here are lovely. They're very welcoming.
And do you get involved in the laying out and setting things up?
Yes, everyone in the shop has a part in where things go and how things are decorated and all sorts.
That's one of the things I love to see, and I'm just going to let you introduce yourself as well.
Hi, I'm Jackie, and I work here on a Tuesday and an occasional Saturday and Mondays.
Oh, excellent. So you two have quite a good crossover then.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And how did you get drawn into volunteering here?
I've always liked volunteering and fundraising, and when it opened, it seemed an ideal opportunity to do what I like.
It is rather nice. It's a local charity serving local people. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful that we've actually... It's for everybody in our county, so it makes it so wonderful. Everybody's so lovely, and it's nice because we're volunteers, so we don't have to work here if we don't want to. So we all get on like a huge big family.
I think that's absolutely true, and I'm sure you'd echo that, Alicia.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. We all love each other here.
Well, it seems like it's a really busy shop, and it gives, I mean, as ever, volunteering as well as giving, etc., brings enormous benefits.
Absolutely.
Thank you, ladies. I'll let you get on with your work.
Well, there we have a view from the front part of the Wooler shop, and as we've been hearing, there's plenty going on there as well. So let's return to the drop-in at Berwick and hear from Michael. You'll have noticed that except for John, whom we heard from earlier, everyone has been female. So time to hear a man's view of all of this.
Hello.
Hello.
Would you like to introduce yourself, please?
My name's Michael Yorston. I was born in Berwick, and I've been coming to the hospice for about 3 years now. Give or take a few months.
To these, the drop-in sessions, the weekly drop-in sessions on a Monday.
Where the shop is now. When I first came, I was the only man, funnily enough.
I think when I first came, you were the only man. And but I suppose the very nature of the drop-ins is that you have, that the people ebb and flow.
I thought a lot of men are probably not very keen. Some have came once, some have came twice. Very few have came three times, apart from myself and Ron. And one or two others over the years. Obviously, some haven't had an happy outcome. I have, fortunately. Touch wood.
Why do you think that men don't sort of stay? Because Gail was saying earlier that it took her about three times to get, you know, to really feel, you know, comfortable.
It was strange when I first came, obviously, being the only man. A lot of the chat was amongst the women, and it didn't really concern cancer subjects. It was where they'd been shopping over the weekend, or where they'd been away for a holiday, or going away for a holiday, or going to a wedding. Or it was what I class sort of more female orientated subjects. But I kind of persevered because they'd gone through the same thing that I was going through at the same time. We were all in the same boat together, so to speak. Some of us worse off than others. And I kind of just kept going. And if I'm being really honest, it does become something of a habit after a while. It's something you do without really thinking about it anymore. I was given the all clear 12 months ago. I don't have any further treatment. I don't have to go back to hospital. Don't have to see the doctor. He said, I don't want to see you again unless something happens. So I suppose in that regard, I'm something of a cheat.
How did it feel, though, to be told they don't want to see you again?
It was strange. Everyone, myself included, thought I'd be sort of doing a whoopee. But I found it a real anticlimax because I was only going every 6 months. And the previous time that I'd seen my consultant, he said, basically, if you're okay the next time, that's it. So I thought, well, nothing's happened. I'm okay. So I had 6 months of preparation, mentally.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for being so open and honest. I really appreciate that. And, you know, good luck.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't think luck comes into it, no.
I don't either.
No.
Well, there we have the male perspective. These hospice drop-ins can be habit-forming. Time, I think, for our third musical interlude and to welcome back the Border Tarts, who will bring us Fields of Gold. Fields of Gold, courtesy of the Border Tarts. Thank you. Towards the end of our visit to the drop-in, another gentleman appeared, so Jackie took the opportunity to hear another male perspective.
Hello. It's nice to meet a gentleman. I've spoken to a lot of ladies, so it's nice to meet a gentleman. Would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Ron. Ronald's my proper name, but I like Ron.
You like Ron better?
Ron Bowden. And come here about 2 years now, and because I've got blood cancer, mantle cell lymphoma, and it's been a great help. I was a bit depressed after I was diagnosed and one thing and another, so I got in touch with my manicure nurse. She came to the house and we talked, and then she introduced us to come here, and me and my wife comes here regular on a Monday. It's good, and it's good for my wife as well, because she's having to handle as much as I am, because even although she's not got nothing wrong that way, I have, and she has to look after me. And she's really a tower of strength when I'm down. So, yeah.
And that's right, because I think it does, when you get these diagnoses and you have to go through the treatment, it does massively impact your family and, you know, particularly your spouse, as you say. Uh-huh. I mean, I think sometimes people think it's only you going through it.
No, my wife and I've got a son and a daughter, and my son lives quite near, and my daughter lives down the Pegswood, and she comes up quite a bit, and we go down with it, but it impacts the whole family, even friends. You know, I've got really good close friends around the neighbours and that, and they're really good as well. Everything's been built around me, sort of style, but my wife's involved as well, so yes. Which is great, like, you know, really good.
That sort of ripple effect.
Yeah.
So what do you think, what do you gain from coming here?
It's just, you can talk freely, and people, they've got the same sort of illnesses you've got, and you don't talk about the illness all the time. You just talk about things and going on holiday and things like that, or if you want to talk about the illness, you can do. And the nurses that come to you, they can take, if you want to have a quiet room, go and talk to them, or you can just talk to them among everybody, which I usually do anyway, because that doesn't bother us now, like, you know, and that way anyway, it doesn't, like, you know.
It seems like a very open environment people, there's no judgments, there's just a sort of desire to share and to kind of cheer each other on.
That's
and to
right.
hear each other's stories, mm-hmm. be sad,
yeah.
live together at whatever stage in life you're actually at.
That's right, yeah. When I was first diagnosed, I asked them, the specialist, what was happening, what was on. Says, oh, you have 5 years. I said, and then that got into my head. The closer I got to that 5 years, 4 years since I was dying, and that really knocked me down, because I said, oh, I've only got another year to go. But it doesn't work like that, like, you know, 5 years, and then you get more treatment if you need it, like, you know. So that was what really got me down a bit. But we're pulling through now and really enjoy things. I do a lot of work for, I cut people's grasses and just do a lot of things. I'm usually working all the time anyway.
You're living?
Yeah, that's right, exactly. Yeah, living.
And that's what this is about, mm-hmm. it seems to me, is
definitely.
Encouraging each other to live, because we all have those depressing moments through our treatments and whatnot. I mean, I've been there, I get it.
That's right.
And yet, just talking to other people, seeing where they're at, and it's like... Yeah,
that's good. What it's like when you come in, and somebody will say something about what they've got, and then you'll just say what you've got. It takes a load off you, it takes a weight off you in a way. You know, I don't know, it's a different sort of thing. It's just sitting in company. It's a different one you come here, like.
And I
usually make scones as well. I do a bit of baking now as well. I never done that before, because I was a lorry driver for years. So I fetch scones in and that. So I hadn't the time this morning. So.
Well, I've really lucked out. I'm coming next week.
Yes.
Well, tongues will wag, Ron, because we've come out in the garden here, and they were all hooting and laughing. We didn't hear that, obviously, on the show, but they were all hooting and laughing, saying, we can hear you out there. So your wife will be wondering what's going on.
What's going on, that's right, yeah.
Thank you so much for being so open, and as you say, that is what coming to the drop-in's like.
Of course it is, yes, definitely, every time. Yeah, and you try and make it every Monday, or as many Mondays as you can, anyway. Yeah. Yeah.
Brilliant.
It's nice to speak to you.
And you.
Yeah, lovely.
You may remember at the start of the programme, Julie mentioned just how revealing it can be to talk to Sue to get a real understanding of what the hospice movement means. So let's meet Sue Gilbertson, the clinical hospice manager. She will make it clear how the hospice's work is no way limited to cancer, and gives her account of how her hospice work suddenly became intensely personal when she found herself caring for her own father, who has Alzheimer's.
Now, we all experience grief and loss and illness through life, and actually working for a hospice doesn't give you a get-out-of-jail-free card. I'm talking to Sue Gilbertson, who's the clinical manager at Hospice Care. Sue, tell us a little bit about your own story.
Yeah, well, 15 years ago, 16 years ago, my dad was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. So he was 69, so he hadn't quite reached 70. And he did fine. And that's the thing with a type of dementia, that people can just live for many years and carry on with life, and not people aren't fully aware of it. And then probably over the last sort of 4 to 5 years of his illness, we could start seeing those changes very much, because he died May last year. And basically, he was forgetting our names. He'd call us all Dave, which, you know, was quite humorous, really.
Is that your brother?
That's my brother, yeah. But nobody ever called my brother Dave. It was David, so I don't know where Dad got that from. But, and, you know, he just couldn't remember anything. We were having to help him walk, and that just carried on over a period of 4 years. And then the very last year of his life, 1 to 2 years of his life, we sat as a family and decided that we needed to put plans in place.
People hearing that might find that quite challenging in some ways to the realities that we sort of live with, that people should be treated you know, for everything. So it's a really important thing, setting this plan up.
Well, I think you know, when you're living with an illness, any life-limiting illness that there is absolutely no cure for, I think it's about just changing your way of thinking about it slightly. And the term, we try to fix things in medicine, and the thinking changes to, it's more around comfort, but still given the opportunities for control and choice about where you want to be, where you would like to be cared for, where you want to die, those sorts of things, and how you would like that to happen. And I always say to people, you know, it's like people are asked to develop and put together a birthing plan. It's quite normal. So why not do that for the very end of your life as well?
Death is part of life.
Yeah.
And you experienced that. So with your dad, it was very much about keeping him at home.
Yeah, absolutely. So even though we put those plans in place, he actually had the plans for 2 years, because that is the difficult thing with any type of dementia, Alzheimer's being one of them, that it's really uncertain and you think, oh, they're deteriorating, but then they're not going quite as fastly deteriorating as you thought. So they were actually in place for 2 years, but when it came to Dad dying, the last few weeks of his life, he was at home, you know, we were all there looking after him as a family. Obviously, being in the position I'm in, I was very much part of delivering and being there for Dad and his care.
Do you think, Sue, that your own experience of nursing your dad, etc., has changed the way that perhaps you view your professional capacity a little bit?
I think it's given me, I mean, I hope I've always been compassionate and provided that empathy and understanding, but it's probably just heightened that understanding even more.
That empathy that perhaps here at the drop-in, we're all listening completely wrapped to what you're saying. And maybe that's something that we find when we come to the drop-in here, is that sort of sense of a real depth of understanding and empathy, which is what people are looking for at their most vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's the family as well. The family are just as equally as important as the person with the illness, you know. And I, you know, throughout my time here at the hospice, because I've been here 11 years now, sometimes we support more family members than the person with the illness, if that is what's identified and that's the need. So, yeah, it's just treating the whole person, the whole family, and doing whatever we can to help.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you.
Well, that chat with Sue certainly illustrates perfectly what Julie was saying at the start of the programme when she was describing how you can easily forget the realities of the situation until you're actually faced with it. It's nearly the end of our programme. I do hope it shed a little light on the purpose and workings of hospice care here in North Northumberland and that you found it as enlightening as I did. But before we leave you, let's go back to Veronica briefly for the first impressions of a newcomer to the drop-in.
When I first came, it was through Gail at a party.
And you were very nervous, you said.
I was very, very nervous because I didn't know what to expect and I didn't know anybody. And we sort of started talking and it was as if I knew everybody. We were all going through the same thoughts in our minds, the whole lot. Very emotional. And when I left here, it was as if, when the session finished and I went out, it was as if a new world had opened for me. And I remember going back to the cottage and speaking to a friend of mine. And I was so emotional, tears, everything. But it wasn't for the bad. It was that all of a sudden, I'm in a different world and I'm happy. And I can talk about it, not be afraid anymore. And yes, brilliant.
Thank you. I think that's how everyone seems to feel.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
It is overwhelming, I have to say. But to have friends like these and more to come is precious.
Yeah.
Yeah, very precious.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone. It's just been lovely to drop in on your drop-in, and sort of just hear all the positive things that everyone gets from it. And thank you so much, and to meet everyone. Betty, the Admiral Nurse.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Excellent. The clinical staff. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Well, listening to that, it's very difficult to believe the struggles that many of those cheery folk have faced and continue to face. It says a great deal for the support they are receiving that they are living life with such calmness and equanimity. Hospice care is indeed walking beside them. That brings us to the end of our programme. Our thanks to all who told us of their personal experiences, to Julie, Sue, Betty and all the other staff of Hospice Care North Northumberland, to Border Tarts, to Tamsin Davidson and pianist James Tweddle. Thanks also to Bondington Voices, with a special mention for Stephen Block for his arrangement of I'll Walk Beside You. And lastly, but far from least, to our stalwart interviewer, Jackie Keynes-Lang. All the music in this feature was specially recorded for the programme using musicians from around the Berwick area. We also owe thanks to the management of Hospice Care North Northumberland for permission to make this programme and for copious supply of coffee and cakes. My name is Yvonne Bell and I'll Walk Beside You was produced by Tony Henke.